Hi, and welcome to the AA Grapevine. I'm your volunteer reader, Shelley Miller. Today, I'll be reading from the January 2026 issue of the AA Grapevine. This is part two for the month. We'll be reading some stories about step one, tradition one, into action, and we'll try to get to some emotional sobriety. So let's get started. And our first story is about step one, which reads, "We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable." Our story is entitled Hitting Bottom. Drunk in a lonely hotel room in 1967, he had a miraculous moment he hopes to never forget. During my 53 years as a sober member of AA, I have said I'm an alcoholic thousands of times in meetings. But today those words have much more meaning to me than they did the first time I spoke them so many years ago. I accepted the fact that I was powerless over alcohol at age 27, but I had difficulty understanding powerlessness over all the other aspects of my life. I had not yet lost everything. I still had my marriage and my children, although I did not know how close I was to losing them, and I had not lost my job or possessions. I was suffering, as many of us do, under the delusion that as long as I presented the outward appearance of normalcy, then everything was okay. The reality, however, was a different story altogether. I was a daily whiskey drinker who couldn't make it past 11 a.m. without a drink. The bottom for me came when, in a blackout, I found myself in Newark, New Jersey, even though my home was in Baltimore, Maryland. That is the period I now refer to as the time of the four miracles. I realized much later that my higher powers were bringing me to AA. The first of these miracles happened when I was in a blackout and holed up in a hotel room. In the background, the TV was playing and a movie came on called I'll Cry Tomorrow, which I'll look up later. During the movie, one of the actors says, "This is Alcoholics Anonymous." That statement, through my fog and daze, came through and lodged in my brain. And when I came out of the blackout, I picked up the phone and called AA. A fellow named Steve, who I later found out worked on the loading dock for a local company, came to the hotel and 12-stepped me. He asked if I could stay away from a drink the rest of the day and said if I could, he would come back that evening and take me to an AA meeting. "Sure," I said, and he left. Then I wasn't so sure, so I left the hotel room and started walking around town. I passed by a church and went inside. I spoke to the priest about my present circumstances, and that's when the second miracle happened. The priest began berating me. "Look at you, man. Look at what you've done to yourself." That was not the miracle. The miracle was that he made me angry, and that anger sustained me and enabled me to stay determined to keep away from a drink until Steve came back. Sure enough, Steve showed up that morning. I climbed into his car, and we drove a short distance to some church and went in. There was an AA meeting inside. Then the third miracle happened. A fellow was celebrating his 2-year anniversary there that night. He stood up and told my story. I was at my very first AA meeting, and I identified with every word this guy said. Right then, I realized that AA could help me. But there was another event, the fourth miracle yet to come. When the meeting was over, Steve told me that we needed to drop someone off on our way back to the hotel where I was staying. He told me that the person we were going to drop off had been his sponsor and had been sober for 7 years, but went back out drinking. I didn't really know anything about sponsorship, but had a dictionary idea of the meaning of the word. Into the car climbed a fellow, best described as a Skid Row guy. He was a mess. After a short drive, we stopped, and the fellow got out and went into a rundown building. On the face of the steps into the building were painted the words, "Rooms, $2 a night." As I watched the man struggle up those steps, I realized with every fiber of my being that it was me struggling up those steps. It was only a matter of time. I'm often asked if things are different in AA compared to when I came into the program in 1967. The important things are the same. One alcoholic talking with another, the importance of regular attendance at meetings, frequent contact with each other, the acceptance of a higher power, a caring and reliable sponsor, repeated and ongoing working of the steps, and service to the group. One of the things that I miss in AA today is that I don't hear as much discussion about hitting bottom as I recall in the earlier days. I think the bottom has been raised somewhat, and of course, that's a good thing. I hope my description of reaching my own bottom and the realization that my higher power was instrumental in my recovery will be of some help to a newcomer. Not only is my recovery a miracle, but I have been privileged to witness that same miracle happening to others. And we have one more about step one, entitled Consequences, submitted by Dennis M. from Suffolk, Virginia. If you're old enough, you might remember Mad Magazine's Alfred E. Newman. He was the big-eared cartoon character mascot who would always say, "What me worry?" My attitude was much like his, regardless of all the evidence to the contrary. All my life, there were signs that I belonged to this great AA fraternity, but I never listened nor heeded the warnings. Why should I? Everything's working fine so far, I thought. I was never comfortable in my own skin until my first senior party. I got really drunk and made myself sick. I was so horribly hungover the next day that any normal person would have said, "I'll never do that again." But not me. By the end of the summer, I could almost finish a fifth of whiskey at one party. When I drank, the lights got brighter, the music louder, and the women more interested, or so I thought. With liquor, I became happy and free to be who I wanted to be, at least for a while. In college, I once woke up under the hedge in a front yard of someone's party. At another party, I came on a mattress in someone's attic. Later, when I was on leave from the Marine Corps, I drove home so drunk after playing poker, my eyes wouldn't focus through the windshield. So I drove with the car door open so I could see the asphalt to keep my car in the middle of the street. Then there was the time I woke up after a happy hour at the officers' club and rolled over, and there was my executive officer's fiance. Amazingly, none of these subtle hits got my attention. I would kiddingly tell friends, "Yeah, my wife left me, but she came back, so that didn't count." Friends and family members would say, "You sure are drinking a lot," and of course I would answer, "Well, that's what Marines do." Finally, these episodes led me into the rooms right to step one. I'm so grateful for the intervention of consequences in my life that made it so. I could have saved myself so many painful years had I listened earlier. I hope this tale of mine will entice those of you who read it to listen to those hints in your life. And now for a story about tradition number one, which reads, "Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity." This story is entitled "The Spirit of Unity." After years of seeing AA as a filling station, he stepped up his game and learned how important our common welfare is. Submitted by George H. in Kingston, New Hampshire. I can't say that I wanted to be a member of AA, even as I floundered about on my way to its doors in the mid-70s. But I can say that I wanted the constant discomfort I felt to come to an end. Isolated and alone, I had come to the road's terminus. There was nothing left to do but to kill myself or join a bunch of older guys who said they were alcoholics but weren't drinking now. So with the heightened apprehension of a wounded animal, I came through the door and began the journey that continues to this day. The basic action step that I gleaned from my first few meetings wasn't one of the 12 steps, but instead the suggestion to attend lots and lots of AA meetings. Since most of the larger towns in the seacoast region of New Hampshire during the mid-70s had at least one meeting, I was able to get to 10 meetings a week on average, and I did this religiously, town by town. This connection with fellow alcoholics, the camaraderie, the familiarity that grew as I got to know others in the fellowship was invaluable. The AA meeting place became a stable environment in which my sobriety could begin to flourish and grow. I was truly as reliant upon the fellowship as a baby to a nursing parent. Then something happened. My plans got in the way. I gave my alcohol addiction to God and God removed it, but I held on to the rest of my life for me to handle. Being in my 20s, I developed a plan for the future, and that plan left God out. After 6 years of at least daily meetings, my attendance plummeted. Other addictions became more important, work, food, exercise, and relationships, but not necessarily in that order. For the next 20 years, I would attend a flurry of meetings, if it were convenient for me, and I would get nurturing from the fellowship and then abruptly stopped attending. Meetings had become a sort of filling station for me. This continued for 24 more years. I was not drinking, but I was not sober either, more like half asleep but thinking I was awake. All this finally came to a head, and not in the way I might have expected either. My life had become stagnant, or rather I had become a stagnant cesspool of selfish and negative thinking. One day a thought from somewhere darted through my head, informing that I might be served well to go through the steps in a much more formal way. Where the thought to do the work came from, I'm not sure. I tried to become nonchalant about it in my mind because I knew that it would require working with a sponsor and attending those big book meetings that I considered unnecessary. So grudgingly and under half steam, I did the work required in the steps and began to have the educational variety of a spiritual experience. Along the way with this step, study experience, came a renewed interest in the fellowship. I began to see the importance of unity. I was no longer doing AA on my own. The fellowship helped me to see meaning in my life when I had none, sometimes by trying to apply the simple quirky slogans, or sometimes by engaging in mundane but important service duties, like setting up the meeting and cleaning up after it was over. Then, as I continued on my merry path, I was appointed to some of the more administrative positions, like GSR, secretary, and treasurer for a short time. Taking the action is invaluable in seeing how important our common welfare is, not only to the group and to AA as a whole, but also to me personally. I felt included and a part of this common solution that we speak about in here. I also learned that I might not like everybody in AA, but I have to love them. The fellowship has been a great place to get the rough edges of my psyche reshaped, and it helped me to change my mind, get rid of old ideas, and develop at least the beginnings of a faith that really works for me. It's service to alcoholics that's been another important lesson for me in putting others first. By doing so, my life has become much richer and much more fulfilling. I don't think so much about myself and my little plans and designs, which could lead me down the rabbit hole that dead ends in a drink. Learning how to yield is a milestone achievement in my life. I try my best to yield to the greater good. I yield to others, and most importantly, I yield to God, especially in the spirit of unity. Giving up my right to be right never felt so good. Also, I see how seeking the common welfare has improved my communication skills. This improvement is almost immeasurable. When I turn my rusty gate of a thinking process toward what someone else needs or wants, my communication skills always improve. Striving to be inclusive, never separating, differentiating, or being apart from, in my experience, is one of the best ways to practice our primary purpose. Finally, what has come to me in at the end of this world gig of mental gymnastics is that without the we in AA, there would be no I. The kind and gentle assistance of other formerly hopeless drunks can help us to recognize and realize the sober and joyous people we were meant to be. Our next story is from the Into Action section, and it's entitled, Please Take One. He had no idea that coming across a well-placed pamphlet rack would one day change his life so much. And it was submitted by Scott S. in Mooresville, North Carolina. I got sober in February of 2023 thanks to the good work of our cooperation with the professional community, CPC, the Public Information Committee, PI, and AA's Fifth Tradition. This is what happened. I grew up in Maryland, where I lived for 51 years, attending college, building friendships, marrying the love of my life, and raising two wonderful children. For 33 of those years, however, I was a very active and high-functioning alcoholic. My last 2 years in Maryland were particularly tough due to isolation from the pandemic lockdown and my spiraling depression while my disease was progressing rapidly. All the while, the consequences of my actions were keeping pace right along with me. As part of a significant family move to North Carolina, I hoped for geographical assistance in tempering my drinking problem. Quite the opposite occurred. While moving all my things to North Carolina, I got the call that I was let go by my employer. I was crushed and went further into depressive drinking. No matter what I did, self-reliance was no longer working. My resentments, fear, ego, and selfishness exploded like a bomb, and shrapnel injured everyone around me. I was now unemployable and on the brink of separation from my wife. I had created distant and pained relationships with my children and had no close friends or connections. I battled for almost 2 more years trying to find new employment and to control my drinking. That's when I got the gift of desperation. One day, full of self-pity, I decided to make myself feel better by getting a library card. After all, a library membership would make me part of the community, I thought. While touring our community's new satellite library location, I wandered over to an area with community information posted. There, I saw a prominent pamphlet rack containing Alcoholics Anonymous literature, bearing curious titles which prompted me to pause. I picked up a few pamphlets and a local AA meeting guide. I remember taking them home, hiding them in a drawer so my family wouldn't find them. I promised myself to read them. A few weeks later, I gathered up the courage to go to my first AA meeting. I felt uncomfortable being around strangers, but hearing people tell their stories made me feel less alone. They told my story exactly. At that meeting, I admitted I was an alcoholic. That surrender lifted a heavy load from my shoulders, so I chose to keep coming back. A few days later, I was asked to share at a meeting. I was nervous and still not ready to talk much, so instead I expressed my gratitude for the meetings and the people who distributed pamphlets because they were instrumental in finding and connecting with AA. Right after me, a gentleman spoke up and said, "I'm an alcoholic and my name is Edward." He looked over at me and said, "You're welcome." That was me who placed those pamphlets in the library. The fact that you're here is an answer to a prayer, so welcome. Overwhelmed by this moment and now sure that a higher power was at work, I connected with Edward and he became my sponsor. I found out he too grew up in Maryland and we were familiar with each other's hometowns. Coincidence? I think not. Edward helped me through the steps and slowly I started to feel like myself again. More importantly, he helped me find my higher power. Now just over 1 year sober, I volunteer with Edward for CPCPI service, carrying the message of recovery to the outside community. It has become crucial to my recovery to get out of myself and to help others. I feel a sense of duty to give back to the program that was there for me. And the story gets better. Edward was invited to speak at a CPCPI representative, and I came along to the meeting for training and mentorship. We met with a group of people who had been arrested for DUI and were taking educational classes due to their criminal offenses. Edward ran the meeting like a professional and then offered the floor to me. I shared a little about myself and my story and then ended up with an offer to take someone to a meeting if they felt they needed help to get there. I was all new for me, but to make such an offer, I remembered how tough it was to walk into an AA meeting the first time. After the meeting, the instructor approached me and said he thought he knew a guy who could use a friend to walk him into his first AA meeting. I passed my information along and said I'd gladly help. Wouldn't you know it? About 30 days later, a guy named Mike contacted me to ask if I could help him find an AA meeting. I fulfilled this commitment, and today Mike is celebrating 90 days of sobriety and has a sponsor now near his hometown. CPCPI work is alive and working. Helping others has given me a purpose I never thought I'd have. It reminds me that no matter how tough things get, there's always hope. And as long as I'm sober, I'll keep sharing that hope with anyone who needs it. God has infinite ways to bring about miracles, and I believe He started mine with a little nudge from an AA pamphlet placed in front of me just when I needed it. And here's another story from the Into Action section, and it is entitled "The Ride of My Life." Submitted by Liz W. in Savannah, Georgia. A sober motorcycle fan in Georgia gets active in AA, lands a great job, and finds a soulmate, all on two hard-working wheels. I love to ride motorcycles. My mom, however, taught me to be afraid of motorcycles when I was young, because she was afraid of them. That's why they were on my list of fears the first time I did my inventory. To overcome that fear, I took a motorcycle safety course put on by the State Highway Patrol's office. That's when I fell in love with riding. Sobriety has given me many opportunities to grow, many I never thought I needed. When I was sober about 15 months, I got involved in carrying AA's meetings into a local jail. It had been a while since a meeting was brought into that facility, so I started off going there alone. I bought my first motorcycle and rode it out to the jail many times. I quickly realized I needed help to bring the meeting there. I had no idea what I was doing, so I got a service sponsor. She encouraged me to put on a workshop about corrections to drum up local interest. She suggested I invite the area corrections representative. People came and we formed a committee shortly thereafter. We started a program and called it Coins for Cons and enjoyed watching the amazing project take off. It's several years now later, and I've since served as a district and an area corrections rep, as well as other wonderful service opportunities. At our local district corrections workshop, I've been invited to share my experience. There was a guy named Joe there who had been taking meetings into the local men's prison. He was asked to speak there, too. We had something in common, as he also loves to ride. We found we have many more things in common, so many, in fact, that we got married. When I was offered a job at the jail, I had to learn new skills. There's a difference between sponsorship and counseling. I doubled up on my AA. I vowed never to let what I do for a living become my program. It's strange how comfortable I can be in a maximum security facility. These are my people. 10 years have passed now. I've ridden motorcycles to jail and back many times. The motorcycles I ride have changed over time. I started with a small bike, and in stages I graduated to a real big girl bike. I got to serve again at the area level. It seems that the more I do, the more I want to do. There's never enough I can do to give back what I've received. God has a way of putting things into perspective. Life changes happen all the time. We get older. The seasons come and go. My husband's eyesight is failing and he can no longer ride. I sold my motorcycle and he sold his. Walking side by side, hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, our life moves forward. Service work took me to New York City, but right before I left on a trip there, my husband said it might be time for a trike, a three-wheeled motorcycle. So that's what we got. I love riding motorcycles again, and I can't wait for the next adventure. AA has given me a life beyond anything I could ever have imagined, and most of it I never knew I even needed. I wouldn't change a thing. I'm on the ride of my life. And we're going to wrap it up with a story about the home group, entitled Surrounded by Love. At a Sunday morning step meeting in Pennsylvania, helping newcomers is what they do best. Submitted by Bill O. of Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Every time I start to feel self-sufficient in my recovery, I get an anonymous wink that lets me know my higher power is still with me, driving the boat. One such occurrence happened 2 weeks ago at my Sunday morning step meeting. We do one step each month, and because it was April, we were on step 4. At the beginning of the meeting, the chairperson asked if there were any newcomers. Two hands went up, which was a bit unusual for this meeting. One guy had 30 days and the other was at his first meeting with 1 day. I saw the old timers whispering to each other and then the chairman, who asked members if because of the newcomers in the room we could change the topic to step 1. Everyone readily agreed. Halfway through the meeting, a man seated 2 chairs to my left, who I had never seen before, suddenly broke down while someone was sharing. He began crying and shaking uncontrollably to the point where it was hard to hear or pay attention to the person speaking. This went on for over a minute. Of course, none of the new men knew what to do, but one of the women sat next to him with a box of tissues and put her hand on his shoulders. The meeting went on and the guy never shared. Immediately after everyone said the serenity prayer at the end of the meeting, several of us approached the man. He was quite distraught. He said he had custody of his son that weekend, and he had lost it in front of him. Not knowing what to do, he found a babysitter and came to a meeting. He lived in another town and found us via the AA meeting guide app. The man had 6 days sober. We talked to him for a while and set him up with a schedule of other meetings for the day. We also each called his phone so he would have our numbers. There were offers of rides, babysitting, you name it. By the end of the meeting, after the meeting, he seemed better. His ex-wife was scheduled to pick up his son at noon. The next day, I kept thinking about this man. What happened? Did he drink? I was still thinking about him when I saw my sponsor the next day and recounted him what had happened. Why don't you call him? My sponsor suggested. But how? I don't have his number. My sponsor correctly pointed out that if I checked my phone, I would find his number when I called yesterday when I met him. Gee, I hate getting tech advice from someone 20 years older than me, but it happens a lot. Anyway, I called the man and was leaving a message when he called right back. He sounded much better and was very thankful for the meeting and the talk afterward. He did not drink, his son was with his ex-wife, and he did in fact go to another AA meeting that night. We talked about how tough it is to raise kids while we're in early sobriety, about getting help and raising kids in general. He told me unprompted that he wasn't really upset about what had happened with his son. Instead, it was what everyone in the meeting was saying about the first step. "That's right where I am," he said. Happy and relieved, I applauded his actions that day and said goodbye. An hour later, one of the AA members who also spoke with the guy after the meeting called me. He had just called him as well, and apparently he had called all the others who had given him their numbers. He had just called to thank them. As we were talking, my AA friend and I both realized the miracle of what happened at our meeting that day. The group had changed the format to step one because of the two people who raised their hands and identified as newcomers. But a person who really needed to hear about that step, the person who had been most helped by our discussion, was actually someone else. A third person who had not even identified himself as new. Wow, that's where a higher power, off in the corner with a wink and a nod. The following week, I realized something else. Had I not talked to my sponsor, and had he not suggested I call the man back, I never would have known that it was the first step discussion that had touched this guy so deeply. It's right where I am. Another wink and a nod, and another day sober. And that's all the time we have. You have been listening to the January 2026 issue of the AA Grapevine. This has been part two. Thank you for listening. My name is Shelley Miller, and I've been your volunteer reader. Stay tuned for more great programming on Sun Sounds.